When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where Jeannie's an apron girl in an apron world, and taxi's drastic, picks fantastic. So much so that apparently we can't find it within ourselves to trade any one of our picks. But yeah, we are now on to day four of the 2024 NBA free agency, and the Lakers actually haven't signed anyone new to their roster who isn't a rookie. 12:01 a.m. four-year Mozgov deal is absolutely rolling over in his grave right now. But hey, the Lakers did sign two new assistant coaches with a ton of former head coaching experience in Nate McMillan and Scott Brooks. So maybe, just maybe, the tide is turning for the Lakers summer. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I am joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. And while things may look bleak, the Lakers were able to re-sign LeBron James along with another max player. A Max Christie player, that is, but a max player nonetheless. Tommy, how are you feeling about the Lakers' inauspicious start to free agency? The last we spoke, it was draft night, and since then, there has been a lot going on, but also a whole lot of actual nothing as it pertains to tangible signings and moves. We had two surprises crop up over the weekend with D'Angelo Russell opting into his player option, and then also LeBron James announcing that he'd potentially take significantly less money on his next contract if the Lakers were able to nab the right player on his list. Klay Thompson, DeMar DeRozan, etc. And you would think, with D'Angelo Russell opting in and LeBron saying he'd take less so that the Lakers could open up the non-taxpayer MLE or open up sign-and-trade opportunities, you'd think that with those two things happening, that would present the Lakers with a tremendous opportunity to really do something substantial here. And yet, it may have only made things more muddled and complicated, as it's been crickets ever since. So it's almost like those two things happening, they were almost like curses in disguise, because the front office had no idea what to do with the $100 bill that seemingly fell into their laps. But with that said, without getting too deep into the weeds of things, how are you feeling about the Lakers' start to free agency? Where are you at on your panic slash outrage meter?
Panic meter, I'm mostly unmoved. Outrage meter is starting to increase slowly. It just feels like, right, like what we're trying to build right now is basically what we were trying to build when LeBron started with the Lakers before we made the AD trade. Like, let's just have LeBron and like a bunch of young guys. Like, you know, we're going to try to develop for the future, but we have LeBron. So like, we'll be good enough just by virtue of having LeBron, but we have all these other guys. Like, we've got four recent draft picks. We've got Austin, we've got Rui, we've got Vando, we've got Max Christie. We've got like, I mean, more than half of our roster is like youngish guys that need player development. Right. So, It's just like weird, and you almost feel like the guy who got the shortest end of the stick here is AD, because he's like locked into 4 years of playing with these guys. He got paid, so I'm sure he's fine. But you know, it just you want, it's just a tough situation because a lot of the moves or lack of moves or missed moves, as some will characterize it as, are just sort of like things that are out of our control. But at some point, right, you can't, and I think I've, you know, said this before, I've been one of the bigger, like, Rob and Laker front office apologists that I've seen, certainly looking on Twitter. But that said, like, eventually you have to be able to do something, right? And I think the thing that's frustrating right now is it seems like we can't do anything. It seems like by the time we hear, oh, the Lakers were trying to get X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z are like the same people they've been trying to get for the last year, and the price is still too high, right? And so it's like you never see like, oh, the Lakers found this like wing who is sort of like on the bench of this other team, and he's got some upside and is on a really good contract, and we were able to get him at like a, you know, reasonable price for like a, you know, potentially high upside payoff. Like, it's never that, right? It's always like,
well, we saw it with Rui.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, I guess, look, it's like we were talking about getting Jeremy Grant like a year and a half ago. We were talking about getting Bruce Brown. So I guess like overall, you just kind of want to see them do something. And we haven't been able to do something. And that's like a little disconcerting. I mean, I don't know. We can go into specifics of player by player, but that's like my overarching theme.
Yeah, so I'm not going to lie. I have tried to remove myself from the crazy cesspool that has been X the last few days. And I'm not going to tell people how to fan. I can only tell you how I feel from my perspective. And I totally get the pitchforks and torches mentality that people currently have. Because, yeah, the front office hasn't done anything through the first 3 days. And it has, I mean, it's been a bad look for Rob and company, with all these people turning them down for one reason or another. And so emotions are high. I get it. But if you really take a step back, peel back the layers, I don't know. For me, I feel like the pylon has gotten very out of hand on Twitter. And I think people have been a little too overreactionary and emotional and haven't used too much of their common sense. And this is not me defending Rob. Both things can be true. I think the front office and Rob Pelinka are pretty inept, and they do not do a great job exhausting all of their options that they have at their disposal. I don't think they're very creative. We have said as much over the years, especially during the Russell Westbrook years. So that can be true on one hand, but it can also be true that, kind of like what you just said, they're kind of hamstrung. And I think the herd mentality that X fosters during these times is kind of insane. And for example, just a few hours ago, people were losing their shit and ready to commit suicide over Dwayne Casey choosing to decline the Lakers offer and stay with his family. And now that the Lakers have signed Nate McMillan and Scott Brooks, nobody even remembers Dwayne Casey. You know, that's kind of the stuff I'm talking about. We're like, guys, who the fuck cares? I don't care about Dwayne Casey. You know, I understand that it's an accumulation thing and that it's Dwayne Casey on top of all these other things. But we just kind of have to relax a little bit and understand the Lakers' current context. I understand that it sucks from a fan's perspective to see free agents fly off the board left and right. Yes, it sucks to not have a single new roster signing through the first 4 days of free agency. But we are acting like we're in the summer of 2022 when we had Troy Brown, Lonnie Walker, Dennis Schroeder, Patrick Beverley, and Russell Westbrook still on our team. And we decided to waltz into the season with that nonsensical group and rightfully started the season 2-10 with that group. For me, yes, it seems like it's kind of tracking that way, which worries me. But even if we go into the season with the group as currently constructed with no other moves but LeBron signing his max extension, which he has already committed to doing, it's nothing like the 2022 offseason that we had with Russell Westbrook. And again, I don't even anticipate us to carry this exact same roster into the season, but I just feel like it's a little bit, I don't know, I feel like we're lacking perspective in the moment, which is fine. I understand emotions are high, but we are essentially whining and crying about a group that ended the season on a 20-10 run and acting like we're going into the season with the Westbrook-Schroeder 2-10 Lakers. Yes, contexts have changed. Yes, the West has retooled and gotten better in some aspects. In other aspects, the West has gotten worse. And obviously, while it's not ideal, so far, the best that I can say for the Lakers is that they have not completely overreacted and over-course-corrected like they have in prior off-seasons. And I guess to counteract that point, they kind of were saved from themselves by having the DeMar DeRozan sign-and-trade situation fall through, and low-key even the Klay Thompson sign-and-trade situation fall through. But I'm saying all this to say that, yes, the front office is pretty mid. They're not great. But also, number two, this is not as terrible a situation as fans are making it out to be. Again, we are crying over a 47-win team last season that should have been a 52-win team. We are crying over a team that actually has a semblance of continuity. Is it championship level continuity? No, it isn't, but it's a way better starting point and foundation to build off of and improve than what we've had in recent years. And also when it comes to the free agency, people are crying over players that we never really had the money to spend on for the most part. Like players LeBron would never have taken a $20 million pay cut for to open up the non-taxpayer MLE. So I kind of went into this understanding that if we were going to upgrade this roster, it was always likely going to come via trade. And yes, obviously those trades haven't happened yet, and everyone's fair to question whether those trades ever will. But the Lakers, as it stands, are currently still armed with a big expiring contract in D'Angelo Russell and two first-round picks. We're not even through mid-July yet. And I wish we could just like fast forward to when we actually make the moves, but I'm more in the camp of seeing how things play out first while I understand that it is frustrating. So anything else to add on that point? And maybe you want to get into, you know, Klay Thompson rejecting us. And yeah, I mean, it came out that Klay Thompson really just preferred the Dallas situation over us because we were offering him an opportunity to get $20 million a year for 4 years. And honestly, I'm not sure if that would have been the best move, considering we would have had to do some sort of sign and trade or salary dump using D'Angelo Russell. Regardless of how you feel about D'Angelo Russell, I'm not sure you want Klay Thompson for 4 years on $20 million, okay? But your thoughts on anything I mentioned, but also maybe the rejection of Klay Thompson and where we're currently at.
So, and I think you hit the nail on the head here with the people getting overly emotional. And I guess like putting aside the emotions, Klay Thompson was the one move, in my opinion, that made sense from a roster fit perspective, made sense from the money. We can argue about whether or not he was worth that in the context of the rising cap. But I guess the thing that's concerning, right, is not necessarily the deals that the Lakers apparently can't seem to get done, which, you know, it becomes an emotional thing, but when you really sit down and think about it, are you trying to trade Rui and two first-round picks for Jeremy Grant? Is Jeremy Grant two first-round picks worth better than Rui, who costs like a third of what Jeremy Grant costs in guaranteed money? Like, I don't think so, right? So it's like, you know, people can get riled up in the emotions, but at the end of the day, those are the offers we're looking at. We're looking at a first-round pick for a $22 million expiring Bruce Brown. That's not market, right? And that's like most teams would not make those kinds of trades. I think the thing that's concerning to me, though, is the inability of these guys, or seeming inability of these guys, to sell people on their vision. I think the fact that, you know, Klay was looking to get out of Golden State. Clearly LeBron knew, you know, I'm sure they spoke before the moratorium was, you know, officially, or like the, you know, restrictions were lifted. But how is it the case that we are not able to sell Klay Thompson on how he could fit here? You know, to the degree that he took $30 million less to go somewhere else. And I don't know what the answer is, right? The thing is, if you want to give the front office the benefit of the doubt, again, maybe Klay just straight up prefer that. And there's like no monetary reason. Somebody in Dallas told him something in one of these meetings that suggested to him that he may have a better time there.
I was going to ask you, did you see Ramona Shelburne's report of why Klay Thompson chose the Mavericks? It was essentially that, like, he felt like the Lakers situation would be too similar to the Warriors situation. And he just wanted to kind of extract himself entirely from that type of vibe and kind of carve out a name for himself with like Luka and Kyrie. So.
Right, right. And so again, viewing it all in a vacuum, like, sure, that's like a reasonable explanation. And you know, if it would be one thing if it came out like, well, Jeannie came out and said she wanted, you know, the Lakers front office only wanted to do the non-taxpayer mid-level, like they did for DeMar DeRozan, and Klay like walked away from that. And then we all say, okay, the Lakers front office is cheap. We like threw a bag at Klay, right? Like we threw more money at Klay than anybody else was offering. We were willing to pay this guy $20 million when he was 38 years old. You know, obviously having the post injury career that he's had. Now that said, he's still an elite offensive player, as particularly as a movement shooter. And so you could make an argument that it probably still would have been worth it. Certainly for the next 2 years, as we close out this like LeBron era, but you know, again, rational, we could have not offered it, and we did. And I think that a 4-year, $80 million offer was very aggressive. But, you know, again, that's one example. I think the thing that's a valid thing to criticize is the fact that this seems to happen over and over, right? It's like, it seems to be the case that when these big names have become free agents, we're not like at the top of their list for whatever reason, whether that's something that, you know, our inability of Rob to like, pitch accurately how it's going to work, maybe our prior head coaches, maybe something about like playing with LeBron people are, you know, a little bit scared about. I don't know what it is, but it just at some point something has to give there, and it hasn't yet. And I think that is the root of what's frustrating everybody. But you know how that manifests itself is a list of like Trae Young, DeJounte Murray, Klay Thompson, DeMar DeRozan. Look at this list of guys the Lakers couldn't close on. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, you wanted to trade D'Lo and two first rounders for DeJounte Murray? Like, you wanted to trade the farm, Austin, Rui, D'Lo, like, trade everybody to get Trae Young? Like, what are we actually saying? You know, so it's like...
The details get lost.
The details get lost, right? Like, the Dwayne Casey thing, right? I this is a stupid throwaway a tweet that somebody said Dwayne Casey has removed his name from consideration. And the next day, the Lakers announced two assistant coaches. So... we don't know, right, the nature of how that offer process went. Perhaps they offered Dwayne Casey a role that was not the
true.
You were going to be the lead, you know, head associate role, and he didn't want that. So he just said, I'm taking myself out instead of you're not giving me an offer, right? And there's a variety of reasons that people might choose to handle it that way. And maybe we as a PR thing, we're like, hey, you could just say you're taking yourself out because tomorrow we're going to announce Nate McMillan and Scott Brooks. So who knows, right? And so it's like these types of things are so silly, I think, to nitpick. There are so plenty of valid things to nitpick. And that, I think that's the thing that becomes frustrating for me is like people get so caught up nitpicking this nonsense that like doesn't actually matter. And then meanwhile, like, you know, it feels like Rob's got a long history of moves that we can criticize that have actually happened, right?
Yeah, people were ready to commit seppuku at dawn. For Dwayne Casey. But yeah, I think the Lakers have not done a very good job controlling the narrative. I think they have tried to control the narrative, but it's been very easy to see through what they're... It's been very easy to see the smoke they've been blowing up people's asses, is what I'm trying to say. Why don't we take it to break? When we return, let's talk more about where the front office has fallen short and talk about what we think will happen next. So yeah, we will catch you guys after the break.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
All right, so we are back. Tommy, let's talk a little bit more specifically about where the front office has failed. To me, this entire free agency, it has felt sort of hapless and haphazard, like it just came out of nowhere. And as I mentioned at the start, maybe the Lakers were not anticipating D'Angelo Russell to like having opted in, or they weren't anticipating LeBron James taking a pay cut. Regardless, it just looks bad that it doesn't seem like everybody's on the same page and that they didn't prepare for those outcomes for whatever reason. And it felt like the front office was all of a sudden beholden to seeing LeBron through on this magical list of star players that he had, that he'd take a discount for. And we had to go down that line of like Klay Thompson first. Okay, DeMar DeRozan. For some reason, Jonas Valanciunas was there, but he got signed to the Wizards. And we had to put everything on hold, including any marginal trades or moves to dump salary to make sure that we had all the pieces necessary to either free up space to get a non-taxpayer MLE guy and make sure LeBron wasn't taking too much of a pay cut, or make sure that we had enough guys to successfully swing a sign and trade deal. And while I understand them kind of being hamstrung in not being able to make these smaller ancillary moves, I don't know, it still seems like they've been pretty slow in their pivots. And that's my biggest issue. And the entirety of this free agency and this offseason kind of lends itself to just, again, feeling so haphazard and lackluster, like there wasn't any sort of planning involved. Kind of like Rob is flying by the seat of his pants, kind of. And I think my biggest issue with this front office has always been not even getting the big name guys, which is a problem in and of itself, but not being able to show any ounce of creativity on the margins and the money ball aspect of things. They showed little hints of that again with the Rui Hachimura deal and maybe even the Mo Bamba deal. But again, those were former lotto picks. I to this day, I don't understand why we haven't gone after guys like a Nick Richards or a De'Ron Sharp. Non-lotto picks who fill a position of need for the Lakers that if you really tried, you could probably get for a couple of seconds, you know? And maybe Mitch Kupchak just hates us and he doesn't want to deal with us. I don't know. But we've never even heard the Lakers linked to these guys. You know what I mean? And so why can't we do something like that now that we know that LeBron James is going to take his max? And why haven't we started to do the marginal salary dumping? I guess the easiest explanation right now is that we are working very hard to try and get a Jeremy Grant deal done, or working very hard to get a Kyle Kuzma deal done. I just hope that if those deals fall through, like it seems like they always do, that we immediately pivot after that. And the question is, are you confident that the front office will be able to properly pivot? Because again, their plan does not seem like a plan at all. You go from Klay Thompson and then DeMar DeRozan, and now the entire fan base just wants to make moves to make a move, you know? And I don't know what they've been saying in these press conferences, the weird two timeline vision thing, kind of to your point, it just feels all over the place. And now we've gotten to the point where D'Angelo Russell is being treated like a Tim Hardaway Jr., like expiring contract. And again, fans are so frustrated to this point that apparently we're just going to give D'Angelo Russell away for nothing, you know? So I don't know. Is there anything else you want to add with regards to where the front office has fallen short? And I guess you can pivot us into, what do you think they're doing now, and what do you think they should do?
Yeah, to your point on the, on like not, I guess like when LeBron, you know, I want to caveat all of this by saying like the order that we receive things from the media is not necessarily the order that things happened in, right? Like I'm sure LeBron through Rich Paul or maybe even directly to Rob, like told him, hey, you know, I'm potentially willing to take a pay cut, I'm sure, depending on the right player. I don't know where the specific list of names came, because if Jonas Valanciunas was actually on that list, the guy actually signed for less than the full non-taxpayer mid-level exemption. So, like, we could have easily gotten him. So, like, clearly there's disconnects, right? It's like, it's not all just what we read, it's the reality. And not necessarily the order. I guarantee you LeBron knew 2 weeks ago from Draymond that Klay was, you know, wanted to leave the Warriors, probably, right? So, you know, the order that we're getting these things in is not necessarily consistent. I think the thing, though, is like, And again, this sort of is related in a way to what I was saying earlier about like Rob's inability to sell a vision. If that was actually an offer from LeBron, you know, if it was not, I will only do this for Klay Thompson, if it was anything other than that, you have to be able to like identify very quickly, these are the types of moves we could take in this world that you're proposing, and this is why we think that it can improve the roster. There were guys who were picked up in free agency and through some of the trades that have already happened that would have been upgrades. You and I were texting last night. I think D'Anthony Melton would have been a very, very nice pickup for us as like a defensive guard. He is going to get paid like the same amount that Gabe is getting paid. It just feels like if that happened and, you know, that was the price it cost to get Melton, we could have figured something out there. You know, that's not, again, it's not like a world-changing trade, but we won 47 games last year and the Mavericks made the finals and won 50 games. So,
but you would have had to sell LeBron on that.
You would have had to sell LeBron, but my point is, like, is that at what point do we say that's an inability of the front office to be able to convince him, you know, of this vision? Like, it's not just take a pay cut for Klay Thompson, right? It's like, well, what about if we did these series of four moves that could result in this roster? All of these would hard cap us, but this is the result. How about that? Right? Not just like, okay, well, his name better be Klay Thompson or Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland or, you know, Miles Bridges or whoever, right? But that's sort of like how it seems like it sort of went. And I don't know. Maybe that's not how it went, but these are all like part of the reason why I think a lot of people are getting frustrated with like the seeming confusion. And these are the types of moves that, you know, the Mavericks did make, and that's what made them a true contender. I mean, Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington's names have been floating around because we've talked about them multiple times. Right?
I mean, don't even forget those two names. Look at what the Mavs have done this offseason to get out ahead of, you know, getting a TPE for Tim Hardaway Jr. and somehow getting Quentin Grimes back as well. And then, you know, it seemed like they had a plan in place and they executed every step along the way. Now, I understand that there is a Lakers tax and a Rob Pelinka tax, but you can compartmentalize these deals with these other teams, you know, to benefit both teams. I'm talking about the Pistons. Like, of course they'd want second round picks and an expiring contract if the Lakers had gotten out ahead of it. And I understand that D'Angelo Russell hadn't opted in yet, so it was impossible for them to do that. But you would just wish that Rob Pelinka was surveying the land more carefully. And maybe he is. He just isn't able to. He's just prioritizing these big deals first, and then it'll waterfall from there. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of just talking myself into oblivion.
Well, I think like one thing that would be helpful here is like, it would be nice to have some sort of clear guidance on what value these guys are actually placing on these first round picks, right? Because it seems like our strategy is holding three first round picks at all times in case a star emerges. Mikal Bridges is not even like a sure thing perennial all-star. He just got traded for four first rounders. Like if Lauri Markkanen gets traded, it's going to be for four or five first rounders. Like we're consistently seeing these like real stars get traded for like five first rounders. Our three first round picks in D'Angelo's expiring contract is not going to get us like a real star player. And so at what point do you say like individually these first round picks, we're overvaluing them in some ways. And you know, overvaluing to the point that like all of us, I mean, I certainly thought this way, but like, I think a lot of people thought that those Dallas trades for PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford were overpays at the time, because at that time, it seemed like those guys were not necessarily worth a first round pick. And I guess like, at what point do we have to say like, maybe a first round pick for a marginal upgrade is worth it, given the stage that we're at. But I think it all comes back to this like weird tightrope that they're trying to walk between, you know, having this like fantasy, you know, player development system where they've got all these like young guys like OKC coming up through the ranks and you don't hear about us for 2 years. And then all of a sudden we have five all-stars. Like they've got that fantasy, but at the same time, they're like actually allegedly trying to contend with LeBron and AD. And so they're, you know, linked to guys like Klay Thompson and DeMar DeRozan who don't are old and like don't necessarily seem to fit the player development goals. So it's just it's bizarre. And I think that's why it's like this front office really needs like a reset and a level set on how they are, you know, thinking about these first round picks. And maybe the answer is like, trade one of them in a trade that you think is a slight overpay, and that way you only have one left to deal with, so people can't ask for two in every deal. Yeah. Like, maybe that's the answer, but like, you have to make a trade first, because, you know, we have talented players, but I mean, to your point about like roster consolidation and freeing up a little space, like, there are pretty good free agents still out there, and we continue to hold on to Cam Reddish, right? I mean, like, right before we started recording this, Torian signed with Milwaukee, which is fine. Like, we drafted Dalton and we re-signed Max Christie. And so maybe like it wasn't obvious like for Torian's role here anyway. But my point is like those types of guys who may or may not be hanging around waiting to see what kind of like contender type roles are available for them are waiting. They're not going to wait forever, you know? So we cannot wait until like September to trade Cam Reddish into Utah's cap space to free up a roster spot, because like everyone's going to be gone by then. I mean, honestly, after this week, most like decent guys like worth a damn are going to be picked up by someone. So
see, the thing is, I even have an explanation for why Cam Reddish is on this roster. I just need the office to waterfall their plans appropriately, because Cam Reddish is still on this roster because Rob Pelinka is trying to execute a bigger trade, right? And because the Lakers are a first apron team, they have to match salary dollar for dollar. And we actually need these veteran minimum contracts to stack on top of a Gabe Vincent or a Rui Hachimura, because the structures of our contracts right now, they're kind of uneven. You know, we have $11 million, $17 million, $18 million, and then a bunch of minimums and one JHS $3.8 million contract, you know? So it's very likely that Rob Pelinka will need to stack on one of those other minimum contracts to make the salaries work, you know? My only thing is, please just execute on the deal. And if it falls through again, pivot immediately, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe, okay, here is my sort of rationale for this. I feel like Rob Pelinka is hanging his hat too much on the brilliant Russell Westbrook deal he made in 2023. Was it 2023? Yes. When he was able to dump Russell Westbrook, he showed everybody, look what happens when you wait a little bit. He was able to top four protect the 2027 first and get back D'Angelo Russell, Jared Vanderbilt, Malik Beasley. I feel like he is holding on too tightly to that vision, that he wants a deal exactly like that where he wins, you know? But at this point, I don't think he can clutch his pearls that tightly. Just get a deal that will improve us marginally. And the last thing I'll say is, even to your point about the first round picks, I can also understand why Rob Pelinka is holding on more tightly to those picks, because they are not the same first that the Mavericks traded. In fact, one of the first that the Mavericks got was from Oklahoma City. They like traded a pick swap in order to get Oklahoma City's like 2024 first, which they then gave to the Washington Wizards. That is not the same as a LeBron-less 2029 first round pick, or a LeBron-less and maybe AD-less 2030 first round pick, you know? So I understand. But at the same time, LeBron James and Anthony Davis are on your team right now. Does that mean you ship off the 2029 first along with D'Angelo Russell for Bruce Brown? No, you don't do that. That's stupid. But maybe you do it for Jeremy Grant or Kyle Kuzma. And if Portland wants you to add the 2031st first, I don't know, Rob, get creative, add 3 seconds to the deal, add a pick swap, add another pick swap, do what you got to do to get the deal done without giving up two firsts, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's sort of, and I think you put it a lot better than I did, but, you know, rephrasing, it's like, sometimes you lose the deal but win the championship, right? And I think that's like, to your point, it does feel like Rob is so concerned about winning a deal. Like, nobody looked at that Russ trade and said we overpaid for that package we got, right? Like, for dumping Russ, right? Like, we traded Russ in a first and we got like three guys, two of whom are still on the team, right? So it actually ended up working out pretty nicely for us. It's not going to be the case that you're going to win every trade like that. And that's what's hamstringing us right now is like, yeah, to your point, Jeremy Grant, I don't want to get into the technicalities of who's better between him and Rui, but like we can say he is better than Rui, right? Who knows, but he's better. And so we can all agree one first round pick is certainly worth it. Now, if two first round picks is too much, maybe you lose that trade. Maybe that's true, but you might win a championship because if we had Jeremy Grant instead of Rui in that Denver series, the series looks a lot different, right? So it's just like Rui, who was a ghost in that series. So yeah, I think that's the thing that's frustrating. And it's like this overvaluing of the first round picks, I think has become a little concerning.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, this is what I think the Lakers should do. At minimum, they should eventually make a salary dump roster consolidation trade to offload a combo of JHS, Wood, Cam, or Hayes, free up a roster spot or two to sign a defender at the wing or center spot. Those are really the holes that we have. We don't have any defenders. We haven't upgraded with that skill. We haven't gotten defenders at the wing or the center spot. Again, make a small trade for a guy like Nick Richards, who's only making $5 million if Charlotte's open to it. JHS, a minimum guy, and some seconds gets it done. If the Lakers can pull off a Jeremy Grant or a Kyle Kuzma deal while only surrendering one first and keeping D'Angelo Russell, that would be ideal. And then you go into the season with an expiring D'Angelo Russell. He helps you in the regular season through the first half. You can actually accurately assess whether has Austin Reeves improved as a point guard? Oh, not yet? Okay, well, at least D'Lo's here. Or if he has, okay, then D'Lo is expendable. And now we have this shiny new $18.7 million expiring and our first that we can use at the trade deadline. And maybe Rob does his 2023 Russell Westbrook trade again in 2025. So try and keep D'Lo if you can. And yeah, I don't know. Lastly, for you, what do you think the Lakers should do? I actually am okay with a marginal upgrade move, a marginal upgrade and a wait and see approach kind of scenario with this team. And I don't think that should be frowned upon or looked down upon. But I understand that fans are antsy for something to happen. So at this point, I am ready to just throw my hands up and be like, okay, fine. You want to give away D'Lo and a first for DFS? Okay, let's do it. Just to say that we did something.
So for me, I think the most ideal would be trying to get something done for Jeremy Grant. I think like there's got to be a trade to be had there. Jeremy Grant has 4 years and $120 million left on his contract. Now, I think that contract looks a little less offensive when the cap rises the next few years. But there are not teams like lining up to take that contract off your hands. Again, he's a talented player. So I think the one first rounder is worth it. And then beyond that, I think that you just have to see like, you know, what else it costs, but you have to get there. You know what I mean? You gotta get something done. And so that's what I would kind of like to see. He's a big wing. He could play either forward spot. He's got like a 7'3" wingspan. He gives you more defense and frankly, more consistent offense than you're getting with Rui. I'd say it's like a fairly substantial upgrade, actually. And so that's the type of thing that I would like to see done. Ideally, if we can hold on to D'Lo in that move, that would be even better. Beyond that, I mean, I'm also, again, fine with your wait and see approach. I think D'Lo's $18 million expiring contract has value now. It's going to have substantially more value in February when a bunch of teams who have, you know, spent last summer and this summer are in the lottery and are going to be looking to like dump long-term salary potentially. Mm-hmm. You know, or even a, you know, team like the Jazz with Colin, like a guy, just trying to think of random guys off the top of my head who have like 2 years left, right? Instead of just one. So that like, At the time of the year when, you know, the trade deadline comes around, teams sort of know where their playoff positioning is, and they're looking to potentially cut salary if they're going to miss the playoffs, and expiring holds even more value than now. So I think I'm fine running with that. D'Lo, notwithstanding everything everybody says about this guy, had a very good season for us and is a good player. And so that's why I'm like, you know, the D-Lo for DFS and those types of moves, like, don't really get me excited. Honestly, the D-Lo for DeMar DeRozan in a, you know, some sort of trade exception deal to, like, get us DeMar DeRozan for $20 million for 3 years, like, that didn't even really, like...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Was there any thought behind that of fit? Any thought of fit behind that? It's like, yeah, let's trade our best three-point shooter on a J.J. Redick-led team, and also he's a three-point shooter that can handle the ball. What are we doing? Anyways...
Yeah, and just to say, the last point on that is, like, I think in all likelihood, we did not seriously consider that, right? I mean, by all accounts, DeMar DeRozan wanted more than the non-taxpayer mid-level,
and then we were out.
So my read of that is J.J. Redick did not want DeMar DeRozan, and that's why we didn't go super aggro to get him. But for whatever reason, it just gets framed as, like, the Lakers lost on this guy. Oh, the Lakers really wanted this guy. Why did they consider it? And everyone goes so far down their own rabbit holes when the result of all of this discussion and crazy, like, conjecturing is we did not go for DeMar DeRozan, as evidenced by the fact that LeBron took his max contract and we didn't do a sign and trade. So, like, clearly there was a price beyond which we were willing to go for him, which that should be an encouraging sign to all of us. But for some reason, it gets flipped around as, like, look at this, we missed on DeMar.
It should be, but it's because the front office isn't doing themselves any favors by not giving us the results, Tommy. We need to see the results. We need to see the execution. Hopefully we'll see fireworks this 4th of July weekend. And with that said, we hope and wish everyone a wonderful 4th of July. Eat some barbecue, see some fireworks, hide your dogs away. And yeah, that'll be it. Unfortunately, Tommy, no new news has broken since we did this podcast. But hopefully we'll get it in the coming weekend and the coming days. And by the way, Summer League this Saturday and Sunday. It's crazy. We're going to get to see Dalton Connect and Bronny James play and Maxwell Lewis. So that should be exciting and take our minds off of the nothing that's currently going on, or maybe the silent somethings that are going on behind the scenes. But with that said, happy 4th of July. And Tommy, I will see you on the other end of the fireworks that are to come this weekend. Later.
Peace.
See ya.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.